Scripture reading this morning before the sermon comes to us from Matthew's Gospel. I'll be reading from the 16th chapter, verse 21 through 28. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord, this must never happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You're a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Verse 24 continues, "Then Jesus told his disciples, 'If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels and the glory of his Father, and he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly, I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." Here ends the reading. May God grant us courage and wisdom for interpretation. Maritza Castillo and her husband were on their way to help a family member, but they ended up saving the life of a stranger. The couple was on Interstate 10 in Houston this past Tuesday, en route to pick up Castillo's brother who had been flooded in. But the pair couldn't reach him because the roads were submerged. "We've got to turn around," Castillo told the reporters. As they waited in stalled traffic, they watched a horrifying scene unfold right in front of them. Floodwaters had picked up an elderly man's SUV and was sweeping it away right in front of their eyes. "My heart started beating fast," Castillo said. Without pause, the couple and dozens of others jumped into the water to help. Somebody said, "Let's form a chain," and that's exactly what they did, locking arms and hands, extending this body of people one by one as a chain out into the water. And as they locked their arms and formed this chain, the drivers and passengers inched toward the SUV. These good Samaritans had little difficulty getting the SUV's door open, but they eventually got it open. And they gathered the man from there using several of their strengths. And he was taken to a hospital locally and reunited with his son. This was just one of the many instances where ordinary citizens banded together to help others amidst the devastation that Hurricane Harvey has brought. Now, the Castillos and this band of strangers who physically locked arms and hands and formed this human chain which rescued this elderly man from these raging floodwaters is just one example of compassionate courage shown in so many instances in the aftermath of this hurricane. If you're like me, you've been seeing these amazing stories unfold. But due to the huge area that the storm has affected, the vast majority of these dramatic rescue scenes that we've been seeing on TV and social media has been by civilians rescuing other civilians, people like you and me sacrificing life and limb to rescue other people just like you and me. And while our hearts break at the death and the loss and the devastation, we're also inspired at stories just like this one that show us that the very best humanity has to offer can still be summoned. And placing the life of this elderly man above their own need for security and safety, these I told you about, they magnified the truth of the words of Jesus in our gospel lesson for today when he said, "For those who want to save their own life will lose it, but those who lose their life for my sake will find it." Now, at first, of course, that verse, that statement, it seems a little bit counterintuitive. I've actually preached it as such before, but really, it's just common sense. like household staples, like bread and wine. Jesus is telling us that life cannot be hoarded and kept for our own purposes, that life, when kept in quantities just enough for ourselves, grows stale. It has a shelf life. It needs to be used. It needs to be broken. It needs to be poured out and shared with others. To do otherwise is to condemn our lives to withering away and dying without achieving any purpose that shares the life we've been so blessed with the world. To experience a life filled with true happiness, true contentment, the fresh life, one might call it, one must give it away before it turns stale and sour. The truth is, a person can have it all in some ways: intelligence, wealth, beauty, family, fame, fortune, and yet lose one's life right in the middle of all that success. These things don't bring true happiness. In fact, many of the richest, quote, most successful, most beautiful people in the world end their own lives, sadly, in suicide. This is proof. Money cannot buy happiness. Now, that's a pretty extreme example, but there are many less dramatic ways to lose one's life. Drug or alcohol abuse, gambling, sexual addictions. There are even more subtle ways of losing one's life, like spending hours and hours in front of a smartphone or computer or television or video game screen, or spending life in virtual reality, in other words, instead of in real, meaningful relationships. There are plenty of other ways we lose our lives. Pornography, technology, workaholism creeps in and steals many lives. Workaholics, for example, they tell themselves, well, I'm working in order to provide for my family, while their families are estranged from a lack of relationship. We all know people who have lost their spouses and children along the way under the pressure of the drive for success in the world. Perhaps these kinds of lives that are lost could be compared to a body of water not too far from Jesus' time. It's still there today, called the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea, you see, receives fresh water but has no outlets. It receives, but it never gives. And so nothing can live in the Dead Sea. Nothing much. Not too much around it either. This is not the life that Jesus calls us to. He calls us to a fresh life, a new life that is in the process of always being made new. One that must make room for newness by emptying its current contents into the lives of others. Self-denial is just one of the key themes of the New Testament. In addition to finding one's life by giving it away, Jesus talked about it in our gospel lesson today, and Jesus expected his disciples to practice self-denial as a way of life. See, when he called Peter and James and John to be his disciples, he expected them to leave their own families, their own comfort, their own boats, their own whatever security they had in order to follow him. This was true of his other disciples that Jesus called. He called them all out of security and comfort and their normal daily routines into radical insecurity and radical discomfort. He made no guarantees. He prescribed no discipleship rewards programs, no pension program, nothing of the sort. They were simply asked to leave everything when Jesus called his disciples and to go wherever he went with him. And those of us who are disciples of Jesus today, we're also called to deny ourselves. We're asked to remove ourselves from the very center of our own universes and make living out the teachings of Jesus the driving force behind our lives instead of our own fancies and whims. This doesn't mean we don't do things along the way that are fun. This doesn't mean we don't do things along the way that are that we need to do in order to care for ourselves. It just means that even our self-care, even our fun, happens in light of following the teachings of Jesus. It's kind of like the discovery Copernicus, a 16th century astronomer, made. He discovered that the Earth is not the center of the universe. Rather, the Sun is the center of the universe, and the Earth revolves around the Sun. And when the way of Jesus is at the center of our lives, things are different for us. We learn to deny ourselves and follow Jesus. Losing one's life in order to find it means denying ourselves sometimes, not just in service of family and friends, but also in serving strangers and maybe even a few enemies. That's self-denial. There's another call that comes to those of us intending to live as disciples from the gospel lesson today: taking up one's cross. By the way, taking up a cross is not a burden that we have to carry. Taking up one's cross is a burden we choose to carry. Voluntary suffering, if need be, for the sake of others. This is the deep end of the discipleship pool, and few choose to swim here. Jesus said, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and then let them take up their cross and follow me." Problems, tragedies, our own weaknesses are not crosses themselves. These things are consequences, usually of our own misuse of freedom or just simply the result of being a human being. But how we choose to handle these kinds of challenges might be a cross if we choose to use the situation to serve others, even as we ourselves are being challenged. There have been many over the years who have been followers of Jesus and who have made conscious decisions to take up their own crosses. For example, Albert Schweitzer decided to give up his academic and social life and go to Africa. Dietrich Bonhoeffer chose to go back into Nazi Germany in 1939 and suffer alongside the German people and Jewish people rather than teaching in the comfort of Union Theological Seminary in New York City. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. could have easily just spiritualized the gospel and safely preached about pie in the sky, nice, sweet things, instead of leading the civil rights movement and clashing often with those who sought to do harm to others on account of the color of their skin. He gave up his life in order to build a better world for people of all races. But it's not just the famous people who can choose to take up their crosses. People like you, people like me, we do it every day. There are people who choose to stay with their disabled spouse. They choose to stick their neck out for their siblings or their spouses or their friends who need an intervention. Maybe, for example, they need to stop their abuse of alcohol and so that it's destroying their lives and driving them to desperation. Someone stands in the gap. It's a choice. It's not a burden they have to choose. It's a burden they choose in light of the love of God and their neighbor. I know parents who work two or three jobs and still manage to find time to play on the floor with their toddlers or to be the coaches of teenagers on the YMCA sports teams. Some of them don't even have kids on those teams. They just love helping. I know children who make it a point to look for someone new at their schools and sit by them instead of by their own circle of friends during the lunch hour. It's a conscious decision. They leave the comfort and security of their own peers to welcome someone else into the life of their school. I heard a story about renowned anthropologist Margaret Mead. She was once asked by a student, "What were some of the earliest signs of civilization in a great culture?" The student expected the answer to be, you know, a clay pot or a fish hook. I would have said a barbecue smoker. Maybe a grinding stone or some other, you know, thing used for grain or food or something like that. But Mead answered, "No, a healed femur, leg bone." She explained that non-healed femurs are found where the law of the jungle, the survival of the fittest, was the primary law of the land and the way people functioned together. But a healed femur shows that someone actually cared. because someone had to do that injured person's hunting of animals and gathering of grain or berries every single day until their leg bone was healed. And so, you see, compassion, Margaret Mead said, is the first true sign of civilization. As Christians, we have agreed to live our lives not as the center of our own respective universes, but to revolve around the life, the death, the resurrection, the teaching of Jesus Christ. The way of Jesus calls us to get involved in the lives of others. The way of Jesus calls us to demonstrate our faith, the belief that life is not to be hoarded, but rather lavished and shared and spent even on others, just as Jesus spent his life on others and even on us. A cross is carrying something that we don't have to carry, doing something that we actually are under no obligation really to do. But because we are people of faith, we carry the cross willingly. Jesus asked, "What will it profit you if you gain the whole world but lose your soul?" Let's just say that a little plainer and bring it closer to where we live. What will it profit you if you obtain all the wealth you're so busy working for and have no time for friends or family or to empty your lives for the sake of others you may not be friends or family with? What profit is there in becoming so highly educated if you never stop and feed the hungry? What gain is there in getting straight A's on every report card if you have no time to volunteer at school, at church, or in the community to make a tangible difference in someone else's life? Do you know what the real danger is if we miss the point? A stale, withered, shallow, lonely shell of an empty life. But we are called to live the kinds of lives that seem less secure and even dangerous at first glance. That is, if we follow the way of Jesus with our own lives, we run the risk of being loaded down with the burdens of others. We don't have to choose this. We are, in fact, are under no obligation of our own, but rather the love of God compels us to choose such a life. Life will stay fresh and full of meaning and hope and vibrance, not when we hoard it for ourselves, but rather when we totally commit ourselves to the way of Jesus. When we, in other words, use whatever power, whatever money, whatever intelligence, whatever resources, whatever positions or statuses we may have in life, we use all of this to serve not only ourselves and our friends and families, but our neighbors in need all over the world and right next door. For it is only in serving that we find a fresh life, a life that never grows stale. Not the stale, dying, dwindling lives lived by so many who live only for themselves, but a life that is being poured out, my friends, always has more room for new blessings to flow in. Do not forget Jesus' promise. Those who lose their life for my sake, they will find it. Amen.